This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Greetings, O godless ones, and to the many listeners who place your faith in humanity instead of the supernatural. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and welcome to Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. And the show is produced by the National Freedom From Religion Foundation, which works to keep state and church separate and to educate the public about the views of non-theists. And thanks for sending in those jokes. Here was a new one that came in this week. A Christian man was late for a job interview, and he was praying, "Oh, dear God, please help me find a parking space right near the front door. I really, really need this job. Dear God, please, I will give up whiskey, and I'll give up women, and I'll give up gambling if you'll just help me find a parking place." Well, this car backed out of a parking place right by the front door, and the guy said, "Never mind, I found one myself."
And that does lead us to the topic for the first half of today's show, which is going to be prayer.
We'll be talking with Tufts University philosopher Daniel C. Dennett, the author of Breaking the Spell. We'll be talking on the second half of today's show. He hasn't been on Free Thought Radio for a year or two, so we'll catch up with him, talk about the column he had this week about religion in the Washington Post. And that's going to be a lot of fun talking with him.
And probably we'll ask Professor Dennett about prayer as well, because when he was recovering from a life-threatening illness, when people told him they were praying for him, his stock reply was, "I forgive you." So we'll ask him about that too. But now we do want to talk about prayer, prayer in the news, what's wrong with prayer. And I'd like to lead in with my favorite quote on prayer. It's by Ambrose Bierce from the Devil's Dictionary. And he gives a definition of prayer: to ask that the laws of the universe be annulled in behalf of a single practitioner confessedly unworthy.
Like Pat Robertson, who prays for hurricane diversions. We're going to listen in a second to what that past master of prayer, Pat Robertson, had to say about the 7.0 earthquake that hit Haiti last week, the largest earthquake on that besieged island state in 200 years, which caused untold misery.
And yes, we did have both President Obama and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton offering some knee-jerk prayer, but at least they backed it up with immediate humanitarian offers.
But here's some real compassion from Reverend Marion Robertson, known to the world as Pat Robertson.
And we should explain, he's talking here, I guess that's the 700 Club, one of his shows, about the history of Haiti.
They got together and swore back to the devil. They said, "We will serve you if you'll get us free from the French." It's a true story. And so the devil said, "Okay, it's a deal." And they kicked the French out. You know, the Haitians revolted and got themselves free. But ever since, they have been cursed by one thing after the other, desperately poor. That island of Hispaniola is one island. Mm-hmm. It's cut down the middle. On the one side is Haiti. On the other side is the Dominican Republic. Yeah. Dominican Republic is prosperous, mm-hmm. healthy, full of resorts, etc. Mm-hmm. Haiti is in desperate poverty. Same island.
Sure.
They need to have, and we need to pray for them, a mm-hmm. great turning to God. Mm-hmm. And out of this tragedy, I'm optimistic something good comes.
And you know, they're about the most Roman Catholic community you can imagine. This is a Protestant evangelist speaking. Now, there's a school of theology known as theodicy, right, Dan? And what is that again?
Theodicy is it's a word that apologists or religious defenders use to supposedly resolve the thorny problem of evil. Exactly why do horrible things like Hades earthquake happen under the watchful eye of a so-called all-loving and all-powerful God?
But I think with Pat Robertson, we could just call it theoidiocy, blaming the victim. You know, it's this pernicious concept of original sin.
Of course, we have from a long time ago, from way back, more than 2,000 years ago, the famous words of the Greek philosopher Epicurus. One of his aphorisms, he said this: the gods can either take away evil from the world and will not, or being willing to do so cannot, or they neither can nor will, or lastly, they are able and willing. If they have the will to remove evil and cannot, then they are omnipotent. If they can...
Then they are not omnipotent.
Oh, did I read that wrong?
Yes.
If they have the will to remove evil and cannot, then they are not omnipotent. If they can but will not, then they are not benevolent. If they are neither able nor willing, they are neither omnipotent nor benevolent. Lastly, if they are both able and willing to annihilate evil, why does it exist?
A good question, and one which religionists have been incapable of answering for more than 2,000 years.
So let's take a look at more futile prayer in the news. This was something that happened toward the end of last year. We didn't have time to report. On Sunday, December 20th, as senators were preparing for a major vote on health reform, Republican Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma casually called on Americans to pray that one of his Democratic colleagues wouldn't be able to make it to the floor so the bill wouldn't reach the 60-vote threshold needed. You might recall that Tom Coburn is a member of Washington's controversial C Street Christian Bible Study Group, sponsored by that rather sinister evangelical group called The Family. Listen to Tom Coburn's own words.
What the American people ought to pray is that somebody can't make the vote tonight.
Now,
that's what they ought to pray.
Who he's referring to is Democratic Senator Robert Byrd of West Virginia, who's 92 years old and ailing. So it was nice to have Democratic Senator Dick Durbin take Coburn to task.
Statement made earlier today by our colleague from Oklahoma, Senator Coburn, who came to the floor and said, what the American people ought to pray is that somebody can't make the vote tonight. That's what they ought to pray. I have been trying to Senator Coburn because he is on a committee that I serve on and I work with him. This statement troubles me, and I'm trying to reach him to come back to the floor and explain exactly what he meant about a senator being unable to make the vote tonight. But I'm reaching out to Senator Coburn. I'll be on the floor in the next 45 minutes, and I hope that he will join me there.
Well, we are pleased to say that nothing fails like prayer because Senator Byrd was wheeled in and made that vote.
So Coburn's remarks, I guess it's kind of a voodoo cursing kind of prayer, isn't it? They join a long list of vindicative prayers by members of the religious right. Pat Robertson, of course, leads the list. You recall he prayed for God to remove three justices from the Supreme Court in 2003. He launched a 21-day prayer offensive directed at the Supreme Court in that year, going after John Paul Stevens, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Robertson's letter specifically mentioned that she had had cancer, and we assumed the fourth target was Justice Souter.
And Reverend Robertson's been making imprecatory prayer, which is...
Is that a word?
Yeah, isn't it?
Imprecatory? Smiting prayers?
Targeting the Supreme Court justices, I think, since the 1980s.
There was that Gary Larson cartoon where God was sitting at his computer, you know, running the world, and on his keyboard there's this big key that says, smite.
So, speaking of spite, the very well-endowed Alliance Defense Fund, which is a right-wing Christian legal group, has made the Freedom From Religion Foundation a target. They sent out an email action alert last week condemning the foundation because we have a legal challenge of the National Day of Prayer.
An action alert that they sent out. We found out about that when we came back last Monday to some very hateful emails.
And I do want to read one of them, the parts that I can read over the air. We duly reported it to police, and it reads, "So you think the National Day of Prayer creates a hostile environment? Try this. If I ever catch one of you, mother, you know what, can't read that over the air, I'll cut your head off and skull, and here's an obscene word for sexual intercourse, you." So how about that? That's what I call sexual freedom. That's the email that we received from one of the supporters of the Alliance Defense Fund, and this idiot signed his name, and that's just plain sick.
And that's the kind of person who supports the Alliance Defense Fund and the kind of hate that's created when government gets behind a God or religious viewpoint.
And we just have a few minutes left before the end of the break, but I do want to point out that the Alliance Defense Fund is raising money all the time on what the Freedom From Religion Foundation does. Every time we send out a press release about a state church violation that we complain about or a lawsuit, they send out their own releases, often begging for money, and they actually send out a 4-page letter asking for people to give them money because we're suing over the National Day of Prayer. And in their briefs to the Supreme to the courts on the National Day of Prayer, they claim that we are raising money making money on our National Day of Prayer case. And I have to say, we have spent over $50,000. We lose money on every lawsuit we ever take. And it really irks me that they make money on our lawsuits. And if you are a regular listener of the Freedom from Religion Foundation, you support State Church Separation, support what we do, hey, join us or help us. And you can make a charitable donation to the Freedom from Religion Foundation. You can earmark it for the National Day of Prayer lawsuit or for our legal fund. And, you know, the Alliance Defense Fund don't need that money. Their CEO made over $300,000, apparently, according to Cherry Navigator's last report. So it's an uphill fight.
So it's kind of swimming backwards, right? When we take a lawsuit and the Religious Right uses it to raise money for their cause.
So when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about what the foundation has uncovered about the evangelical roots of the National Day of Prayer. And you're going to hear a doxology you may have never heard before. I'm Annie Laurie Geller with Dan Barker.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Margaret Sanger's motto was, "No gods, no masters."
And I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Coming up, Daniel Dennett, philosophy professor, a non-believer, author of the best-selling book on religion called Breaking the Spell. We're finishing up our conversation about the inutility of prayer and the foundation's lawsuit challenging the National Day of Prayer. Annie Laurie, where are we with the foundation's lawsuit about the National Day of Prayer?
Well, the case rests. It's before Judge Crabb's court in Wisconsin and in the federal court, and we're suing President Obama and his press secretary, because you got to do that. And we're also suing Shirley Dobson, who is the chairwoman of the National Day of Prayer Task Force, and that's how the Alliance Defense Fund jumped in on the case. They're defending her. And what we have found out is fascinating, that in 1952, Reverend Billy Graham, that warmonger, went to the Capitol Hill and did like a long
crusade
and then suggested there should be a required National Day of Prayer, and Congress immediately passed it, requiring the president to give a National Day of Prayer, and they could choose the date, but it could not be a Sunday, which showed their intent to promote religion on other days. And then in 1988, as the result of the National Prayer Committee, which now the National Day of Prayer is an offshoot of, they lobbied and they asked to get a fixed date because they said it would make it easier for them to organize events, government events around prayer. And we learned a lot of interesting things in the deposition of Shirley Dobson, that she said that she goes and asks God every year for what the theme should be in the scripture verse, and how thrilled she is when governors pick up the exact wording because that's what God wants and that kind of thing.
But she knows what God wants.
And yeah, and what we are arguing is that the government and this evangelical Protestant group are working hand in glove with their promoting the proclamation and the theme and the Bible verse, and often many of the governors picking it up, and often the president picking it up. And for example, in 2008, George Bush picked up their proclamation and the scripture verse and the theme, and that the government does not have the right to invade, the personal conscience of citizens and tell them to pray. And this is what's so offensive. And, you know, we don't elect the president preacher-in-chief.
Yeah, he's our commander-in-chief, and he's the president of all the people. So that case is in court right now, ready for a decision. Speaking of prayer, a lot of churches end their worship services with what they call a doxology. Let's listen to the Monty Python version. Is written by Eric Idle, a Monty Python version of a doxology. It's turning some of those words on their heads. This is called All Things Dull and Ugly.
Little snake that poisons, each little wasp that stings.
law person. So well, there's interesting doxology. Of course, there is no God, but again, this whole idea, where does evil come from? If there's an all-knowing, all-powerful, all-good evil God, then why do we have so much misery?
Well, if God gets the credit, if he wants the credit, he should also take the blame, because the Lord God made them all. I am Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and you're listening to Free Thought Radio, a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We'll be back for the second half of today's broadcast to speak with Professor Daniel C. Dennett, the author of the book Breaking the Spell and Darwin's Dangerous Idea. He's a famous non-believer, a best-selling author, about an exciting article that was just run this week in the Washington Post about is there a bias against religion in the media? So stay tuned.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Speaking freely, thinking freely.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker. We're here on Free Thought Radio.
And we're very happy to have on the phone today, speaking with us from Santa Fe, New Mexico, Daniel Dennett. Regular listeners of the show are familiar with Daniel Dennett's works, his books, his writings, his articles. He's the author of the best-selling book, Breaking the Spell, Religion as a Natural Phenomenon. He also wrote many other books, including Freedom Evolves and Darwin's Dangerous Idea. He's university professor and Austin B. Fletcher Professor of Philosophy at Tufts University and co-director of the Center for Cognitive Studies at Tufts University. So thank you for being on the show today, Daniel.
Delighted to be with you, Dan.
Now, the reason we called you this week is because of that wonderful article you had in the Washington Post this week, The Religious No Longer a Protected Class. And it was such a powerful, succinct article that we wondered if you might want to just read it for us, like just on the air. Would you like to do something like that?
I'd be happy to do that, Dan.
Let me ask you something. They started with a question. Did they ask you this question and then you responded? Is that it?
Yes. This is the On Faith website. This is not in the print Washington Post. It's on the website called On Faith. And every week they ask a question and people send in their answers. And I've done maybe, I don't know, 10 maybe over the last couple of years. And this is the most recent one.
What if I read the question and then you read the answer?
Okay.
All right, how's that? All right. Here's the question. Is there widespread media bias against Christianity, against evangelicals such as Britt Hume and Sarah Palin, against public figures who speak openly and directly about their faith, against people who believe as you do?
To which my answer is, there is no media bias against Christianity. If it appears to some people that there is, it's probably because after decades of hyper-diplomacy and a generally accepted mutual understanding that religion was not to be criticized, we've finally begun breaking through that taboo and are beginning to see candid discussions of the varieties of religious folly in American life. Activities that would be condemned by all if they were not cloaked in the protective mantle of religion are beginning to be subjected to proper scrutiny. There is still a lot to accomplish, however. We need to change the prevailing assumptions in the same way that public opinion has been reversed on drunk driving. When I was young, drunk drivers tended to be excused because, after all, they were drunk. Today, happily, we hold them doubly culpable for any misdeeds they commit while under the influence. I look forward to the day when violence done under the influence of religious passion is considered more dishonorable, more shameful than crimes of avarice, and is punished accordingly. And the religious leaders who incite such acts are regarded with the same contempt that we reserve for bartenders who send dangerously disabled people out onto the highways. I also look forward to the day when pastors who abuse the authority of their pulpits by misinforming their congregations about science, about public health, about global warming, about evolution, must answer to the charge of dishonesty. telling pious lies to trusting children is a form of abuse, plain and simple. If quacks and bunko artists can be convicted of fraud for selling worthless cures, why not clergy for making their living off unsupported claims of miracle cures and the efficacy of prayer? The double standard that exempts religious activities from almost all standards of accountability should be dismantled once and for all. I don't see bankers or stockbrokers wringing their hands because the media is biased against them. They know that their recent activities have earned them an unwanted place in the spotlight of public attention and criticism, and they get no free pass, especially given their power. Religious leaders and apologists should accept that since their institutions are so influential in American life, we have the right to hold their every move up to the light. If they detect that the media are giving them a harder time today than in the past, that's because the bias that protected religion from scrutiny is beginning to dissolve. High time.
Well, I wanted to say that if we hadn't already given you the Foundation's Emperor Has No Clothes Award, we would do it again.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Annie Laurie. I'm delighted with my association with the FFRF and delighted to be on the program with you.
And I was so struck by, for example, bringing up the idea of how drunk driving used to be considered socially acceptable, and then kind of comparing that to the way that we look the other way when violence is done in the name of religion. And that takes a lot of courage.
Yeah, it's an interesting comparison, isn't it? I mean, the switch on drunk driving happened, as I say, within my lifetime. And it was a firm, gentle pressure by intelligent people that turned people around. We have a way to go on that, too. We designated driving is not yet the norm that it should be. If only we could have designated drivers for religions, we'd be all set.
They come in and accompany children to church or something.
Designated, yeah, right. Designated thinkers.
Designated thinkers, there we go.
Well, and you know, people say this, and I think that a lot of people who are brought up in religion and only are taught or brainwashed to think it's benign, I think they would be shocked by your saying, for example, you know, that we should hold pastors accountable for their misinformation. But, you know, do you want to talk a little bit more about, you know, you write a lot about evolution, the harm.
Yeah, let me say a bit more about that. I, like every other reasonable and scientifically minded person, I think, really frustrated with the shocking level of ignorance and positive misbelief in America about evolution. And it's very easy to get angry at people for clinging to these beliefs. I don't blame the average person who's been taught by their pastor, been told by their pastor, by their church, that evolution is a myth or is baloney. We all have our authorities. Certainly, most of what I think I know because I have various authorities that I've trusted to tell me the truth on these matters. And you can't really blame people, many people, for trusting their pastors. That is the authority that they know best, perhaps. But then that means we should really hold the pastors responsible. I think that any religious leaders that are spreading the falsehoods about intelligent design or about new young Earth creationism, that this is they are seriously culpable for that, and the fact that that's what their religion teaches is no excuse.
I think it's probably because in a big chunk of that bell curve of our intelligence in this country, there's a lot of people who are just intellectually lazy. They don't want to do the homework or the time or the energy, or they don't even trust their abilities. So they hand off that responsibility to their religious leaders to do all that work for them, and they become, what, slaves or soldiers within this army just following orders.
Well, I think it's okay to outsource a lot of your decision-making. We all get a lawyer if we're smart. If we have any legal problems, the person who's his own lawyer has a fool for a client, as they say. And I even think it's okay to outsource your, as it were, your moral advisor. But it's not okay if you don't check them out first and make sure that you're getting a good one. If you just blithely and naively trust the first moral advisor who comes down the pike, then you're responsible for following that advice blindly. I think every religious person should, in effect, hold their pastor's feet to the fire and see whether they know what they're talking about. It is your responsibility, if you're a member of a church, to make sure that you're getting solid goods, really good advice.
Yeah, but who does that? Who really does that, though? They just, you know, he was ordained in my denomination, so that's good enough for me, you know?
Well, that's the trouble, of course. And that's where I think we've got to stop honoring people the way we do now for taking their faith on faith, as it were. I think that for too long, we've let people have a sort of wild card in any discussion. If they say, well, that's what our church teaches, and that it's just not up for discussion, that's what I believe. You say, well, you know, that's really a problem that you have. If you're not able to address the question of whether what your church believes is the right thing, then you're really sort of crippling yourself for the moral discussion, aren't you?
Now, you also wrote in this piece last week for In Faith, this website column at the Washington Post, that activities that would be condemned by all if they were not cloaked in the protective mantle of religion are beginning to be subjected to proper scrutiny. What exactly are you talking about there?
Well, I think we are looking more closely, for instance, at polygamy, at child abuse, at practices that are on the borderline. I think, for instance, Santeria has animal sacrifice, and that's on the border for a lot of people. Is this something we should continue to tolerate in the name of religious freedom, or is this something that is just a little bit beyond the pale?
Or perhaps something like, you know, the war against civil liberties for gays, led by religion.
Yes, I think that's a good example too. I think that we don't permit other institutions, public institutions, to discriminate on the basis of sexual preference. We do at the moment permit religions to do that, and I think that's something that we should look at very closely. And as we should also reconsider the tax exemption for religious institutions, since we know that so many so-called religions are really just tax shelters.
And the foundation is suing over the parish exemptions that all ministers can claim, so that'll be interesting.
On their taxes.
Yeah, on their taxes.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
good.
It's just starting.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, it hasn't gotten a lot of media, but I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio, and we'll be right back to finish our conversation with philosopher Daniel C. Dennett.
This is Richard Dawkins, author of The God Delusion, and you're listening to Free Thought Radio.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio. We're speaking with Daniel C. Dennett, Austin B. Professor of Philosophy at Tufts. He's currently the William Miller Fellow at the Santa Fe Institute, and he's author of Breaking the Spell, famous for his works and books on consciousness, other books including Darwin's Dangerous Idea. And Professor Dennett, I'm sure that I have already asked you this or I've read it, but what was your, did you have a story where you had to break away from religion, or were you raised without religion?
No, I didn't have to break away in any strong sense. I went to Sunday school in a congregational church in Winchester, Massachusetts, and took my religion pretty seriously for that liberal Protestant denomination when I was 12 or 13 or 14, actually was confirmed in the church. But almost immediately thereafter, I thought otherwise. And although I continued to enjoy the music and some of the ceremonies, I didn't believe anything anymore. And I think by the time I was 15 or 16, I was an atheist. I didn't go around talking about it much, but I was.
Well, if you were confirmed, then you're covered, you know.
Oh, that's it. Yes, I'm covered. I'm safe. Yeah, I've got that safety net for sure.
But now you do like to talk about it now. I mean, I think you feel that there's some imperative for people of influence to make known their descent from religion.
Yeah, I was actually convinced of this during the that dark age that we've just emerged from the Bush years, when it seemed to me that the voice of religion in America was becoming altogether too prominent and too demanding, and that we were sort of beginning to inch towards some sort of theocracy. And I thought, well, it's time to start speaking out. And I wrote an op-ed for the New York Times where I told people about the Brights. Now, a lot of people think I coined the term. No, not at all. That was Minga Futrell and, I've forgotten his name. Paul Geiser.
Yeah.
And their idea was that atheists, freethinkers, agnostics, humanists, they needed a positive term to unite under, and they came up with the idea of calling them Brights. And the idea was to do the same thing that the word gay had done for homosexuals. And I thought, well, that's an interesting idea, and I sort of got behind it a bit and talked about it. And you know, I got hundreds and hundreds of emails from people who were so relieved to hear me coming out of the closet, in effect, as a Bright. And a lot of them said, well, you know, I could never admit that I'm a Bright. In my town, I have a dry cleaning establishment. Nobody would bring their dry cleaning here. I'm a dentist, so I'd lose all my patients. So there's a lot of closet Brights out there, especially in the Bible Belt. And they really are very much in the same position that gays were in the 50s and 60s in this country. They are lonely, they're a bit afraid, they can't come out, and it is tremendously encouraging them to know how many fellow thinkers there are out there. So while I am encouraging everybody who dares to come out and join hands with the rest of us, I think it's very important that we not out anybody.
But at least someone like you coming out gives people permission. It gives them it's a legitimacy to being able to be who they are.
And it's been really heartening to see how many people have responded to that and how much more candor there is about atheism just in the last 3 years. I think that the recent surveys have shown this, and it's important for people to realize that there are many times more public atheists in this country than there are practicing Jews, for instance.
Yeah. Or
Muslims. There are more atheists than Mormons. Now, we certainly, the politicians are very concerned not to offend the Jewish vote or the Mormon vote. They haven't yet realized that if they offend the atheist vote, they're in for some trouble.
Well, thank you so much, Professor Daniel C. Dennett, for joining us today. Everybody needs to look up his books if they haven't read them already.
Breaking the Spell,
Freedom Darwin's Evolves. Dangerous Ideas. Thank you again.
Delighted to be with you.
We also want to thank our engineer and producer, Brian Tarani. Free Thought Radio is recorded in Madison, Wisconsin.
Ask for more information about FFRF at FFRF.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. You can get a sample issue of Free Thought Today, our newspaper. We invite you to join us, to help us, to work for separation of church and state, and to promote free thought in this nation. And tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday